In the summer of 2010, my life changed forever.
At that time, I was still in law school, and I spent the summer break in the remote tiny town of Insjön, working as a legal intern at the corporate headquarters of a retail chain. It was the typical law student summer job. It looks good on a resume, but it's kind of useless in practice. I sat in on meetings I didn't understand, I wrote legal memos no one read, and I drank way too much office coffee. One weekend, as I sat alone in the DDR chic apartment the company put me up in, my cell phone buzzed. A package I had been waiting for had finally arrived. So I ran to the post office, I showed my ID, I carried the package home, I tore it open, and there it was, my very first smartphone, an HTC Desire.
I had no idea back then, I don't think anyone did, just how fundamentally the smartphone would come to change our lives. And in this video essay, I want to talk about that. And I want to focus on a massive, but often overlooked, cost that the smartphone has imposed on humanity.
On a Tuesday, the 9th of January 2007, Apple CEO Steve Jobs went up on stage to announce the launch of its smartphone.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
I am no Steve Jobs fanboy, but I will admit that Steve was prophetically correct about this. Since 2007, in less than 20 years, the smartphone has taken over the world faster than almost any other technology in human history. Most technologies we take for granted today didn't become mainstream overnight. As you can see in this graph of technology adoption in the US, running water, electricity, flush toilets, washing machines, vacuum cleaners, they all took decades to become widespread. The smartphone, however, it reached near universal adoption at a remarkable speed. Today, 4.3 billion people, or 53% of the world's population, own a smartphone. And in the US, 91% own a smartphone. At the same time as these smartphones spread over the world, the best engineers of our generation packed their bags and moved to Silicon Valley with one mission: to get people to spend as much time as possible looking at these new smartphones. And they succeeded with this beyond their wildest dreams. Due to inventions such as the like button, push notifications, algorithmic content feeds, the infinite scroll and short form video content, humanity today spends a stunning amount of time looking at phones. In Germany, people spend an average of 3.35 hours per day on their smartphones. In the US, it's 4.34 hours. In India, 4.77. And in Indonesia, people spend over 6 hours per day on their phones.
We spend so much time on our phones that many researchers today are sounding the alarm about what this screen time may be doing to us.
For example, this is Gloria Mark. Her research has shown that our attention spans are diminishing dramatically. In 2003, her test subjects were able to spend an average of 150 seconds on any given task before they were distracted. In 2012, it was 75 seconds. And in 2016, 47 seconds. And this is Jonathan Haidt and Gene Twang. In books like The Anxious Generation and iGen, they make a quite compelling case that all of this screen time is more or less messing up the younger generation. It's telling that last year, the word brain rot was named the Oxford English Dictionary Word of the Year, a word that means...
Brain rot, the supposed deterioration of a person's mental or intellectual state, especially viewed as the result of overconsumption of material, now particularly online content, considered to be trivial or unchallenging.
However, the research into the negative effects of smartphones and social media is not uncontroversial.
For example, researchers like Andrew Persbilsky and Amy Orban point to studies suggesting that the connection between screen time and mental health issues probably is overstated in the public discourse.
This debate, whether all of the time we spend on our phones is incurring a cost on our health, will probably not be resolved anytime soon, but, and here comes the point I want to make in this essay, this debate probably distracts from the fact that even if screen time doesn't cause a health cost, it is definitely already indisputably incurring a massive opportunity cost.
This is Friedrich von Wieser. In 1911, he coined the term Opportunitätskosten, or opportunity cost, in English. Opportunity cost, which is one of the first concepts you learn if you study economics, is defined as
opportunity cost, the loss of potential gain from other alternatives when one alternative is chosen.
As an example, if you spend 1 hour in your chair looking at your phone, the opportunity cost is the value of the best alternative thing you could have done during that time instead. And depending what you value most, that could mean 60 minutes meeting a friend, 60 minutes reading a book, or 60 minutes baking sourdough bread, whatever floats your boat. And this is important. The more we use our phones, the higher the opportunity cost gets, because the value we get from spending time on our phones may be positive at first, but the value decreases dramatically the more we do it, which also means that the opportunity cost rises the more time we spend on our phones. And if we're spending 3 to 6 hours daily, the opportunity cost gets enormous. And now imagine scaling this up to the billions of people around the world who are glued to their screens. The combined opportunity cost of smartphones on humanity is almost impossible to comprehend.
I came to understand the massive opportunity cost of screen time on a personal level 7 years ago when I hit rock bottom.
In 2018, I was living abroad in Washington, D.C. for work, something I had dreamt about doing ever since I was a kid. But after 2 months of being there, I realized something was wrong. Instead of exploring cafes, museums, and finding new friends, I had spent nearly all my free time there doom-scrolling on my phone or chatting with friends from home. One day when I felt particularly miserable scrolling my phone, it also hit me that ever since that summer in Incheon when I got my first smartphone, I had barely read a single book outside school. Reading had once been so important in my life, now I could barely do it anymore. I realized something needed to change. So what did I do? I threw my phone under the bed, I walked out the door, went to a store, bought an e-reader, downloaded a few books, and headed to a hipster cafe by DuPont Circle. And after 8 years of barely reading, I started reading again. And this changed my life. I read Yuval Harari's bestseller Sapiens, and it completely blew my mind open to new ways of thinking. I read The School of Life's book A Job to Love, and it gave me tools to figure out what I want to spend my life doing. And I later read David Epstein's Range, and I realized that it's never too late to learn new things and change your life.
I still fall back to excessive screen use quite often, actually. But I'm pretty confident that if I hadn't sort of hit rock bottom when I was in Washington, D.C., I probably wouldn't have broken my screen addiction, at least temporarily. And in turn, I wouldn't have found back to reading. And in turn, I wouldn't have dared to leave my corporate law career. And in turn, I would never have started making video essays like this one. Given the life-changing effects I experienced from breaking my screen addiction, and given that I still fall back to excessive screen use way too often, I have been asking myself, can we do something to make it easier for people to put down their phones? Do we need some type of regulation? Or is this just something we all need to solve on our own? Or is there perhaps a third layer to this issue?
This is Tristan Harris, famous from The Social Dilemma. Tristan blames our excessive screen time on the addictive and exploitative methods that the tech companies use, and he wants us to regulate those methods. In other words, to Tristan, excessive screen time is a technology and regulation problem. And this is Neer Eyal, author of Indistractable. He argues that it's up to us as individuals to take control of how we use our time. In other words, to him, excessive screen time is a personal responsibility problem.
So who is right? Is excessive screen time a technology and regulation problem? Or is it a personal responsibility problem? Well, I believe it's both, but I also believe that there's a third layer to this issue that is often overlooked. Excessive screen time is also a problem of societal norms.
The societal norm today looks like this. Almost wherever we are, the societal norm says that it's not only fine, but it's actually expected that we pick up our phones. But the thing with societal norms is that they can, and they do, change. In this famous ad from 1949, a doctor recommends Camel cigarettes. Back then, it was perfectly normal for nurses and doctors to smoke, even at work. But over time, societal norms shifted, and it became inappropriate for doctors to smoke at work. And it wasn't until after the norms already had shifted that it became illegal. Or consider racist, sexist, and homophobic jokes. There are clear indications that such jokes have become much less common, also in private settings. Not because jokes like this have become illegal, but because societal norms have shifted.
So what if we can shift our norms when it comes to screens as well, just like we shifted our norms about smoking and sexist jokes? And if so, how can we help get that change started?
Well, as George Washington wrote in 1780,
example, whether it be good or bad, has a powerful influence.
Today, social science research bears out that so-called behavioral contagion profoundly affects what we do. Whether you will start smoking or not depends largely on how many of your friends are smoking. And how much alcohol you drink depends largely on how much your friends drink. Whether you as a house owner will install solar panels or not depends largely on how many solar panels you see on roofs around you.
So I think it's a quite reasonable hypothesis that if you will be glued to your phone or not depends mostly on whether other people around you are glued to their phones. I've also noticed very clearly in my own behavior that if I'm on a train, for example, where I see people reading books, I am way more likely to also put my phone away and take out my book.
So if we want to change societal norms, maybe we can be guided by the author Brian Clough's idea that we control nothing, but we influence everything. I am Andres Acevedo, and this is The Market Exit. So over the past 6 months, my channel has grown a lot, and people keep telling me that I need to boost this growth by breaking up my video essays into short-form content for platforms like YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels, and TikTok. And from a business standpoint, this makes sense, and I even considered doing this, but then I realized that I don't watch short-form content because it messes up my dopamine levels and it makes me miserable. So is it then ethical for me to flood the market with it? Well, probably not. So I've decided to keep focusing mainly on long-form content, which also means that I depend entirely on your support of my long-form videos. And the simplest way to support me is to like, subscribe, and to share my videos. And if you really like what I do, I invite you to patreon.com/themarketexit. Any amount helps. And to my existing patrons, thank you very, very much. So I normally make all of the motion graphics for my videos myself, but for this video, I had the privilege of working with Carla Nunez, a brilliant motion designer who made the two beautiful collage animation scenes for this video essay. Please check out more of her amazing stuff and follow her at KFX Animation on Instagram. Also, big thanks to my sister Anna Clara for operating the camera on the walk and talks in this video. All right, that was it for this time. Bye-bye.